Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. The truth is, at times, verbal violence can be worse than physical harm. You may have heard this before. The boneless tongue, so small and weak, can crush and kill, declares the Greek. The tongue destroys a greater hoard, the Turk asserts, than does the sword. The Persian proverb wisely saith, a lengthy tongue, an early death. Or sometimes takes this form instead, don't let your tongue cut off your head. The tongue can speak a word whose speed, say the Chinese, outstrips the steeds. The Arab sages said in part, the tongue's great storehouse is the heart. From Hebrew was the maxim sprung, thy feet should slip, ne'er let the tongue. The sacred writer crowns the whole, who keeps his tongue doth keep his soul. In Job 5:21, Eliphaz, he talked about the scourge of the tongue. In Psalm 52, David said that the tongue is like a sharp razor, and he spoke of words that devour. Psalm 140, it tells of men who have the poison of a viper under their lips. In Proverbs 11:9, we are told, with his mouth the godless man destroys his neighbor. In Proverbs 12:18, it talks about the one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword. In Proverbs 15:4, it says that the tongue can crush the spirit. And James, of course, declared that the tongue is a fire and a restless evil full of deadly poison. Oh, the power of words. As you know, a word can set families, communities, and nations at war with each other. A word can crush the self-esteem, destroy a hard-earned reputation, or cause another to lose his job. A word can ruin a friendship, tear apart a marriage, split a church, and on and on. We get that song in our songbooks, Angry Words, and it talks about this. You see, once we say something, we can't get it back. You know, you can apologize, but often the damage is already done. As in the song, love is much too pure and holy. Friendship is too sacred far for a moment's reckless folly, thus to desolate and mar. Well, our main text for this morning is Ephesians 4:29. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, building up, according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. Well, according to the BDAG and other lexicons, the word for unwholesome here could be translated as rotten or putrid. So, I think we all need to ask, how often could that be descriptive of the words that proceed from my mouth? And how often in my conversation, you know, is it actually uttered with the purpose of building up and giving grace to those who hear? Yeah, but does God really care that much? I mean, it just sounds coming from my mouth, right? Just vibrations in my voice box. Well, let's see what Jesus had to say about that. You remember they had just accused him of casting out demons by Beelzebul, a name for Satan. Matthew 12:36-37, I say to you that every careless word that men shall speak, they shall render account for it in the day of judgment. For by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned. Well, why is that? Because words show your heart. Look at verse 34. You brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. Okay, what I want to do now is talk about the different types of unwholesome speech. Now keep in mind, these are things that we all have to work on. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. James 3:2. So like always, this sermon is just as much for me. Now also keep in mind that some of these are a bit subjective, some are cultural, but for the most part, I think that they're pretty clear. Lying and bearing false witness. Well, first of all, do you realize how serious it is? The ninth of the Ten Commandments for the Jews, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Exodus 20:16. In the list of the seven things that God hates in Proverbs 6, one of them is a lying tongue, and another is a false witness who utters lies. It's so serious that God killed Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5 for a lie. He was obviously trying to make a point. Revelation 21:8, it says, "But for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." John 8:44, Jesus, he told some Jews, "You are of your father the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies." You see, Satan's lie to Eve in the garden caused the death of every human from that day forward, Genesis 3:4. And their lying and bearing false witness would cause Jesus to be nailed to a Roman cross. And sadly, lying has become so widespread and prevalent in this culture. See, a few years ago, Reader's Digest did a survey of Americans asking several questions, trying to determine what percentage of people lie in this country. And the results of the survey determined that 96% of Americans are not truthful under certain circumstances. I read about another survey that was done by the Josephson Institute of Ethics, and it was on 12,000 high school students. 83% admitted to lying to a teacher in the past year, and 93% admitted to lying to their parents in the past year. And about half of them agreed with this statement: a person has to lie or cheat in order to succeed. You know Satan's pleased with that. And how many times in trials have we seen witnesses proven to be false, telling lies either to help or to harm the person who is being tried? Stephen Duke, a professor at Yale Law School, obviously frustrated. He was talking about this and he said, "Perjury is commonplace in America. I don't know if that was as true a century ago as it is now. I imagine that a century ago, more people believed that God punished perjury than now, when it appears that almost no one believes that." And how many times have politicians and other people with power been caught lying and so forth? Proverbs 6:12, "A worthless person, a wicked man, is the one who walks with a false mouth." Proverbs 12:22, "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord," and there are plenty of others that talk about that. Lying is actually pretty foolish when you think about it, because you often have to tell another lie to cover up that lie, and then you got to tell another lie to cover up that lie you just told, and well, it just snowballs, and it ends up turning into this great monster. So maybe some of you have seen VeggieTales, Larry Boy and the Fib from Outer Space. That little innocent-looking fib, it starts out small, and it just grows and grows. And then you're often found out, and among other things, you may never be trusted again by those people. And it's only a matter of time. Proverbs 12 and verse 19, "Truthful lips will be established forever, but a lying tongue is only for a moment." As Dwight L. Moody put it, "Lying covers a multitude of sins temporarily." Christians are told, therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one of you, with his neighbor, Ephesians 4:25. And do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices, Colossians 3:9. And I think there are some people who are training their children to be liars without even knowing it. Just tell them that I'm in the shower or something like that. We'll just tell the man at the ticket booth that you're 12. See, children are so impressionable, and they see and they hear everything. Now, what about little white lies so as not to be blamed for unfortunate circumstances? I remember being in a video rental store one time, and the guy who was close to me, he got a phone call. And he was obviously not supposed to be there, and he answered the phone, and he's talking. And he said, no, I'm in the car right now driving home. And, I almost walked over next to him and said, beep, beep, crazy drunk driver or something like that. I maintain that it's better to be blamed now than found out later. So there's lying. A righteous man hates falsehood, Proverbs 13:5. Okay, next we got spreading gossip, slander, and strife. One of the Hebrew words for gossip and slander that we find in the Bible, it's related to the word for a peddler or a merchant. You see, it's like they're selling these juicy tidbits of information. Now, in English, we use the words a bit differently because gossip, well, that's telling the truth in bad ways, or spreading rumors which may or may not be true. But slander, that has a much harsher, much sharper edge. Slander is telling lies in order to destroy someone's reputation. Like them saying Jesus was a glutton and a drunkard, Matthew 11:19. Gossip and slander, these are often told by people trying to feel better about themselves and trying to look better in the eyes of others. The problem is how many careers and marriages and friendships and reputations and so forth have been destroyed because of gossip and slander. You may have heard the illustration of the woman who started this rumor about a preacher in a small town, and it got so bad and so widespread that the preacher just had to move. And on his way out of town, he stopped by this lady's house with a feather pillow. And when she answered the door, he asked for a sharp knife. And reluctantly, she brought him one. And he took that knife and he slashed that feather pillow. And the wind just took those feathers and they went flying everywhere. They just seemed to go for miles. And he said to her, I want you to go and to pick up all of those feathers, take all those feathers, get them and put them back into this pillow. And she said, that's impossible. And he replied, exactly. And that is what you have done to my reputation. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 31. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. 1 Peter 2, 1. Therefore, putting aside all malice and all guile and hypocrisy and envy and all slander. I've read that in some cultures, to quietly stand by while someone is being slandered, and you know it, is morally equivalent to standing by while someone is being physically assaulted. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 18, he who spreads slander is a fool. Proverbs 20 and verse 19, he who goes about as a slanderer reveals secrets, therefore do not associate with a gossip. Well, as has been pointed out, gossip actually injures three people. It injures the person doing the gossiping, because eventually people are going to label them as that, and they're going to quit telling them things about their own lives. Well, it obviously injures the person that they're gossiping about, and it injures the person that they are gossiping to. Now, have you ever thought well of someone until this other person started telling you all the bad things about them? And it's now ruined your estimation of that person and maybe your relationship with them. You didn't need to know that stuff, and it may not even be completely true. Now, there is a big difference between gossiping about someone and discussing a problem that a brother has in order to figure out how to help him or her, to help lift them up. You see, what are your motives? Well, the Bible, it also talks about spreading strife and sowing discord with the tongue. See, in that list of the seven things that God hates in Proverbs 6, the last one is someone who spreads strife among brothers. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, and that's P-E-A-C-E and not P-I-E-C-E, Matthew 5:9. Some people just really seem to enjoy it. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and 4 and 5, Paul, he talked about those who have a morbid interest in controversial questions and disputes about words, out of which arise envy, strife, abusive language, evil suspicions, and constant friction. See, I remember kids in school and their bloodlust, you know, egging others on, trying to get them in a fight simply for entertainment purposes. Have we grown out of that? Next, complaining, criticism, and negativism. As has been observed, there are some people who have turned criticism into a recreational sport. As a child, I enjoyed watching Sesame Street, and one of the characters is Oscar the Grouch, who lives in a garbage can by choice, but he lives up to his name with his perpetual complaining and criticism and negativism. And Oscar's character is, it's amusing because he's a caricature of people that we actually know. I mean, we've all got the acquaintance or the relative or the coworker or the neighbor whose misery never runs dry. I mean, they dwell on every bad thing and they feel compelled to share it with everyone around them. Most people just thought it was funny and a waste of time. But in 2009, Missouri Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver, he tried to introduce House Concurrent Resolution 155. And what it was is designating the day before Thanksgiving as the official Complaint-Free Wednesday. And the resolution began by saying, whereas the average person complains approximately 15 to 30 times per day, resulting in roughly 4,500,000,000 complaints spoken every day in the United States. And well, he sent out a letter to his colleagues, and it's, his letter said this, please join me in co-sponsorship of a resolution to designate the day prior to Thanksgiving as Complaint-Free Wednesday. From time to time, we all experience anxiety, frustration, stress, and regret. And often, we respond to these feelings with a criticism or a complaint. Regrettably, complaining keeps people stuck on current problems, inhibiting them from thinking constructively to find solutions. And research has also shown that complaining can be harmful to one's own emotional and physical health, relationships, and can limit professional career success. Well, from what I understand, he mostly just got a bunch of complaints for doing that. Philippians chapter 2, 14 and 15. This is one of those passages that I need to remember more. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. The NIV says complaining or arguing. And that you may prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you appear as lights in the world. Complaining and arguing, those are worldly characteristics, and we're not to look like the world, we're not to act like the world, we're not to talk like the world. This is stupid. I hate this. Come on. Can you believe it? Give me a break. What's the deal? I am so sick of this. It isn't fair. This is slower than a turtle on Valium with crutches. Wading through peanut butter, wearing a heavy backpack. Now, have you ever been feeling just fine? Your day's going great, and someone comes along with a negative comment that just ruins your mood. It doesn't do any good. All it does is dampen spirits and cause people to be resentful and depressed and unproductive. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 16, a fool shows his annoyance at once. Numbers 17:10. But the Lord said to Moses, put back the rod of Aaron before the testimony to be kept as a sign against the rebels, that you may put an end to their grumblings against me so that they should not die. Is it God had just about had it. Paul, he was in a dark, dank, dirty dungeon or whatever it was, but you'd expect him to be complaining up a storm. And yet listen to what he said in Philippians 1:12 through 14. Now I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and to everyone else, and that most of the brethren, trusting in the Lord because of my imprisonment, have far more courage to speak the word of God without fear. You see, instead of complaining, he looked for the good. Complaining, criticism and negativism, nothing but rotten speech. Okay, boasting and bragging. As Wayne Jackson put it, there are those with whom one can scarcely engage a conversation without being bored to tears with an incessant stream of self-adulation and dubious accomplishments. In the list of qualities of love, 1 Corinthians 13, one of them is love does not brag. See, love doesn't parade itself. Love doesn't brag about its possessions and accomplishments and abilities. So how do you feel about a braggart? They're always the subject. Look at me. Ain't I wonderful? I mean, no matter what story they're telling, it always has to do with them being the hero. Look at me. Look at me. Now, I have to ask Professor Schenck about it, but this seems to come from three areas. Either arrogance, I mean, they truly think that they are better than others, or being starved for attention as a child, so it becomes a habit, or from a feeling of inadequacy. I mean, they're actually intimidated, and so it's a facade. But you notice that none of these three are very admirable. Francis Bacon, the 16th century philosopher and scientist, he made an interesting statement, and it was something to the effect that a bragging man is scorned by the wise and admired by fools. Don't toot your own horn. Here's a good exercise. Do something good and keep it a secret. Can you do that? So don't brag at people. Trust them to love you for who you are. In the list of qualities and things done by those with a depraved mind, Romans 1:30 mentions boastful. In Proverbs 27:2, it says, "Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips." Let your virtues speak for themselves. Obscenities, foolish talk, and rude humor. This is the stuff that used to get your mouth washed out with soap. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 4, we're told there must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. The word for filthiness here is defined as obscenity, nastiness, deformed and disgusting speech. This is gutter language and cuss words. Silly or foolish talk, this is speaking of senseless and stupid remarks. Things like racial slurs, overgeneralizations, just over-the-top statements. Some people fall into this when they're talking about politics. But Christian speech is to be dignified. It's to be coming from a place of wisdom. Not off-the-cuff, knee-jerk comments and off-color remarks. I mean, we need to think about what we're saying before we say it. And coarse jesting, now that's not talking about clean jokes and witty exchanges. There's nothing wrong with that. The word here literally means easily turned, like taking something that's good and turning it into something dirty. I mean, this is the locker room type of jokes. This is much of the stuff that we get from the comedians these days. There's stuff that's just rude, crude, and lewd. And looking at these three, you probably noticed that many of the movies and TV shows today just filled with these three. Now, there's something else that fits into this category that I think we need to be careful of, at least consider, and that's euphemisms. And that's something that I've struggled with, something that I've had a problem with in the past and have wondered about. Shoot, flippin', darn, dang, heck. You know, the substitutes for the bad words. They represent those bad words. Now, some are definite and some are not, but I don't know, why can't we try to find something that's not connected to a bad word? When Ruth was really little, she made this hybrid between my word and what on earth. And she'd say, my earth. This little teeny thing going around. My earth. I just think we need to be careful. Profanity and blasphemy. Now, to profane means to treat something holy as if it was as common as dirt. Taking something from the sacred sphere into normal life. It like taking God's name in vain. As you know, the third of the Ten Commandments for the Jews was, "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain." Exodus 27. And Leviticus 19 and verse 12, "You shall not swear falsely by my name, so as to profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." You notice that Jesus would start his prayers with, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." Matthew 6, 9. Hallowed means set apart, precious, holy. We're not treating it as that when we say, "Oh my God," or "God," D-A-M-N, or even flippantly, "Thank God," or "I swear to God." Don't use the Lord's name lightly or without thinking. Now, I would even argue that we need to avoid using the abbreviation or the initialism OMG. The psalmist said things like Psalm 61:5, "For you have heard my vows, O God. You have given me the inheritance of those who fear thy name." And Psalm 86:11, "Teach me your way, O Lord. I will walk in your truth. Unite my heart to fear thy name." Do we fear and respect it, or do we just use it as an exclamation word? What I want to do now is to give you four ways to try to help us to overcome unwholesome speech. Number one, control the avenues into your mind. There's that saying, what's in the well of your thoughts will come up in the bucket of your actions. See, if you've just thrown a bunch of junk into your well, how can you expect to draw anything but junk out? I mean, you're not going to draw out fresh, clean water. In Luke chapter 6 and verse 45, Jesus said, "The man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth what is good, and the evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth what is evil. For his mouth speaks from that which fills his heart." And that's why I think we got to be very careful with what we see, hear, and read. Movies, TV, internet, books, music, even the company that we keep. So avoid unwholesome speech as much as possible, or I guarantee it's going to slip out, and probably when you don't want it to. So control the avenues into your mind. Number two, realize the possible consequences of unwholesome speech. Proverbs 12 and verse 13, "An evil man is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will escape from trouble." Proverbs 13, 3, "The one who guards his mouth preserves his life. The one who opens wide his lips comes to ruin." The wrong word spoken at the wrong time can actually get you killed. Read the news. Proverbs 14 and verse 3, "In the mouth of the foolish is a rod for his back, but the lips of the wise will preserve them." Proverbs 18, 6 and 7, "A fool's lips bring strife, and his mouth calls for blows. A fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are the snare of his soul." Now again, what comes out of your mouth, that can indeed ruin your life and or the lives of, you know, of others. And it can't be taken back. It's not easily forgotten. You can apologize, but as the saying goes, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. So realize the possible consequences of unwholesome speech. Number three, think before you speak. Now, there's that acrostic that some people like. Think. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? Think. A good general rule is to be quick to speak, or quick to hear and slow to speak, right? Proverbs 17:27, "He who restrains his words has knowledge." We've got to have a filter. We need to be careful and also not just adopt the language of our culture. We got to take a little speech test and ask ourselves some questions. Why am I saying this? You know, what's my motivation? Could this be taken the wrong way? I mean, could it be misunderstood? Could this offend the hearers? Will this build up the hearers? Ephesians 4:29. There are many, many, many times in my life when I wish I had asked these questions. And number four, priority and resolve. How bad do we want to get rid of unwholesome speech? I've seen people who put up a sign in their office that says, "No gossip zone," or it says "whining" with a slash through it. Or some people that, you know, they wear a WWJD bracelet. What would Jesus do to remind them? Hey, whatever works. But I think it really comes down to whether or not we're going to have the priority, resolve, and discipline. How bad do we want to be like Jesus? You notice that a lot of times in Scripture, we're not given steps and suggestions on how to stop doing something. We're often just told to cut it out. I like Proverbs 30 and verse 32. If you have been foolish in exalting yourself, or if you have plotted evil, put your hand on your mouth. We got to put the reins on our tongue. Psalm 50 and 19, it talks about those who let their mouths loose in evil. Don't be one of them. Are you letting Satan control your mouth? James 1:26, if anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. And keep in mind, it doesn't just apply to the spoken word. I mean, what are we saying in our emails and our texts and in our Facebook posts and so forth? So I'd like to finish with our text from this morning, Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear.